The Odd Life of Timothy Green is a magical realist fable about the arrival of a mysterious boy into the lives of a childless couple. The boy is played by C.J. Adams, the couple is played by Jennifer Garner and Joel Edgerton, and the film was directed by Peter Hedges. The latter two gentlemen are here with us today to talk about the film. Peter Hedges, of course, directed Pieces of April and Dan in Real Time, and he wrote the screenplays for What's Eating Gilbert Grape and About a Boy. Joel Edgerton has been in tons of movies, among them Warriors, The Thing, Star Wars Episodes 2 and 3, and the soon-to-be-seen Felony, Zero Dark Thirty, and The Great Gatsby. But we're going to talk about The Odd Life of Timothy Green with these gentlemen. Thank you guys for doing this.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
This movie is about family, so I would like to talk family, if we could, and go straight to the point of the movie. It's sort of a fanciful rumination on the joys and the woes of the meaning of family. I loved how the plot hinges on a sort of like a series of mistakes the parents make.
Well, you know, I'm glad that that's how you've described it, because every mistake leads to another mistake, which leads to another mistake. And that's very much how I designed it when writing the script, that you know, and ultimately that in many respects is the parents' job, is to make mistakes, and hopefully they're not, you know, permanent mistakes, but you inevitably when human beings raise humans, there will be mistakes. And of course, parenting, I mean, we get more training in this country to drive a car than we do to become a parent.
Boy, amen to that, really, seriously.
So what was interesting from a story standpoint was that here's a couple that want a kid more than anything, and then they get a kid in a surprising way that hopefully audiences will be, you know, willing to take that kind of wonderful cinematic leap that we do in movies like this. But that then we watch these two people make, you know, the kinds of mistakes that a normal, you know, time frame you'd make over 10, 15 years, they make in 10, 15 days or 10 or 15 weeks,
right.
You know, and I thought that kind of accelerated learning curve could be really fun.
What I really like, though, is, you know, mistakes, they have such a pejorative kind of connotation. And it's like in this film, the way you dramatize it, it's like okay to make the mistakes, and the mistakes are sort of part of the overall picture so that hopefully we would learn. So we, you know, we'd get more insights, and then we could whatever become as prepared as we're ever going to be to do whatever it is that we set out to do. And in this case, it's, you know, to become a parent, and who the hell knows how to do that?
No, I mean, exactly. Really. And it's something you're constantly revising. And,
yes.
And even though, as a parent, I experienced that the minute you figure your kid out, they've changed, because it's built brilliantly. I mean,
yeah.
Just right at that point, you go, we've got it. We've got age six down. Then they become a different person, and you're becoming a different person. And so you're constantly evolving, and it's a process. It's just a day-to-day, moment-to-moment process. And when it's at its best, it's experienced fully and completely in the moment. And, you know, you just try to be well-intended.
Well, you guys, I think you really nailed that, you know, because family, the family, quote-unquote, is so charged. It has such a political connotation. I think that the meaning of family, really, it's not necessarily
biological.
Right, biological.
Correct.
Or a Leave It to Beaver kind of thing.
Not at all.
Can you each address, via your own responsibilities in the film, that of director and actor, respectively, the challenges of pulling off a convincing, magical, realist fable on screen? Because a lot has to be left unexplained, but we, the audience, have to believe what we're seeing, you know.
I think, really, it's not just us and our job, but it's the audience's job. Is what I love about a movie like this, it's a contract you have with an audience, you know. And the great thing is every movie that's ever been made has helped sweeten that deal, because we're all used to taking those leaps that Peter was talking about, the suspension of disbelief. And I think what's great about this movie is it's not overblown, it's not overdone, it's slid under the door, and we get it or we don't, and I assume we'll get it. And then we move on with real life, and every now and then we're reminded of the magic. But the magic isn't saturating the movie. The magic is just one conceit that I think helps us hold a nicer prism up to the real situations of family and small town America, or small town anywhere really, in economics and what it means to make stuff and provide things to the world, you know. So the magic to me is just a slight patina on the movie, like nice dusting of magic dust rather than a big magic sledgehammer. Peter?
Look, it's a great question. As I kept writing and writing, I found that the story was best served if I didn't try to over-explain.
I imagine that would be the temptation, right, to try to do that.
Early on I did. Yeah. I just wanted to convince anyone, any literalist out there, to say, this is possible, this could happen. and then I kept looking at Big and It's a Wonderful Life and The Wizard of Oz and movies that we are in our cinematic DNA. And I thought, well, these two people want a child so badly, and they, for whatever reasons, are not able to have a child biologically. And in their grief, they bury their vision of what their child might have been. They do that. And then, a moment of magic occurs. But all along, it's been an issue of how to strike that balance between the real and the magical. And what I felt was if you can go with that, and then watch these performances, and if I can render in the writing, characters that feel real and relatable, and then cast it the way we were able to cast it, and have actors like Joel and Jennifer and CJ and everyone else deliver performances that are so human, then we will have navigated that tricky balance.
Right. Joel, this is kind of a first for you, right? I mean, it's... When I think of your body of work, the first word that comes to mind is edge. I mean, there's a lot of edge and grit to what you do. And this is it was great seeing you play a dad, like a real dad.
Thank you. Look, there has been flashes on the past for me, like Kinky Boots. You know that. I mean, very different movies, obviously, but tonally, a kind of a warmth to movies. And I'm definitely attracted to those stories. But also, I also reflect that in the same way that you could look at a director's body of work and see a running theme, I think you could also do the same. And because actors, are not told what to do. If they're lucky, they choose what to do. And I think you could actually find that actors have a kind of a running theme sometimes in the work that they choose to do. And as much as this movie is not Warrior, it's not Animal Kingdom, all of those three movies are such examinations of family. And I think that says a lot about me, I think.
Yeah.
And what interests me.
I also liked how the story inverted the... the notion that the parents have or the adults are possessed of all the wisdom. That a child, too, can be wise. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because I actually knew this because I share that name. But the name Timothy is Greek in origin. I'm sure you know this. And it's literally translated to mean honoring God or in honor of God. And I don't know.
I didn't know that.
I just thought that was... It was interesting that the character was named Timothy, and he was kind of like this mysterious, kind of mystical, spiritual metaphor, if you will, of whatever that is, that mystery is that we can't quite, some people call it God, whatever. Anyway, I don't know if I'm putting too fine a point on it.
No, I'm glad that you saw that.
There's something very comforting, too. This maybe sounds silly, but there's a pencil factory in this movie. Mm. And are there still pencil factories
in
operation? There are.
Very few. A good friend of mine from college who recently passed away was from Shelbyville, Tennessee. And I'd say, what was Shelbyville like? And he'd say, well, we were the pencil capital of the world. And when I started writing this, factory in Indiana closed because they were making campers, and that factory closed, and it decimated the town. And I thought, because I wanted this story, which is going to have a lot of heart and humanity, I wanted it to reflect the economic realities of our time. Films made when they're made should reflect, even if it's a sweet, ultimately hopeful film, it can't be born out of some completely disconnected to the time we're in.
Yeah.
And so I was looking for what would that product be that this town could make? And I know I thought of my friend and where he was from. And yes, there's a pencil factory in New Jersey, and there's one in at least one in Tennessee. Most of them have gone overseas.
Is the pencil going there out of the typewriter? I think probably. I mean, I hardly ever use them, actually.
I think typewriters are definitely fading away. The pencil will always have a life, but it certainly is less and less probably used. But I do think there's still some pretty good pencil volume sales going on.
I love pencils. I actually really enjoy them. But Peter said something the other day which I loved, is that, you know, this whole idea too, that this idea within the movie that we should be making stuff, that we need to be kind of on our toes and not on our heels, and we need to be producing. It's part of what helps us go and what helps the economy run. And that the pencil was a great symbol for that, because the pencil itself is being made in the factory, but it's also something that all other inventions are born from, this idea that you could sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil and create something else. So it has its own evolution. And I love that a pencil, as I think the movie says, is something that kind of allows you to make a mistake. You know, you can...
Ah, yes, you can erase.
You can erase it.
Right. There's also, I found, like, there was an overriding message to the story, which is, I don't know what, to just chill, to kick back, to go with the flow, be in the moment. I don't know, get out of your head, it seemed to be saying. I don't know, honesty is freedom. It was a thematically rich story for those looking for that. And the emotion behind it was really, you know, it was hard to sort of hold back the tears a couple of times in this story, which is a testament to, I think, you guys working it, and we're sort of being given the hook here.
Yeah.
You're doing good.
I want to say something about that, because I've always really loved these stories about kind of a stranger rides into town, you know, alters
like
the nature.
Yeah, those kind of movies were. Yeah, and you never really know where they came from, how they got there, or where they went when it was all over.
Yeah, and you know that you can't keep them because they've got to move on and affect the lives of other people. But what those stories do for me is they really kind of reinforce on a really universal level the importance of change and being open to change. And it's so... The reason why those stories exist, I think, is to let us know that we've got to stop holding on to things and we've got to be fluid.
It's
the only way to evolve.
I agree. It's really the only thing that's constant. It's the only thing we really know, that things change.
Yeah, and the older we get stuck, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so... And children, are the reminder that change is so easy and possible if you're allowed to. Because children are constantly being forced to change. I mean, you finish school... You got to go somewhere else. You can't stay there.
Right.
You know, when you're a child, it's easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're changing. Their bodies are changing
all
the time. And, you know, I'm real proud that we put a film in the world that really talks about the preciousness of time, that you only get kids so long.
And
kids only get their parents so long. That was a surprise in writing it when I got to the end and was writing that realization that, you know, they only get us for so long too.
Yeah.
And I love that Timothy, you know, one of his big issues, big points with them is for them to not give up, you know.
Okay, well, we've been in conversation with Joel Edgerton, ensemble cast member, and Peter Hedges, both waxing marvelously philosophic here about The Odd Life of Timothy Green. So check it out. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.